and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, fighting the 20% tariff they've slapped on our show, but I think we should be able to get it removed in short order, so...
Believe me.
We'll see what happens.
Well, you know what? He could wake up tomorrow and it could just another school day at the White House.
He'd be our biggest fan.
He could be. We do talk about him a lot, which is, I hear what he likes.
Oh, let's tweet to him, get him on.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. Today, we will talk about Ontario's plan for a guaranteed basic income. The news that the government of Kathleen Wynne was looking to enact such a progressive policy came ahead of today's budget. But is this a legit plan to eliminate poverty, or is Wynne just trying to sow some left-wing bona fides? And then we will discuss Earth Day a little bit late, but better late than never. We will have Shane Ward of Plastic Free Guelph and Susan Carey of Transition Guelph. It's been a tough time for the environmental lobby lately from an international policy perspective, but can local solutions make up the difference where our politicians have failed? We will ask that and other questions to our guests. And speaking of guests, we had Charlie Angus in town last week, what Scotty unofficially dubbed Charlie Angus Day, because it did seem like he was everywhere and
should have given him the key
anywhere.
To something, right? Maybe not
Absolutely.
The city, but
well,
I don't know.
Maybe give him the key to the Albion. That seems apropos.
That's probably the place, yeah. Maybe his band played there all those years ago.
Oh, maybe. So if you don't know, Charlie Angus is the Timmins James Bay MP, NDP. He is also running for the NDP leadership. And so he was here last Thursday, and he did a tour around. He was at the Breezy Corner Breakfast Town Hall. He was at College Heights. There was a bit of a fundraiser sort of house party for him in the evening. House party being relative considering...
Did you end up at the party? I went to the party.
I did not go.
And I didn't realize it was... I'm not sure if it was really supposed to be an open invite. I don't know if it was supposed to really be in the media, but it was, so...
Well,
I went. But of course, people need to know that it was at Phil Ault's place. And of course, Phil is a friend of the show. So it's like, yeah, why wouldn't we go, right? So
I also got
lovely cheese tray. It was wonderful.
I also got about like three different invites from like NDP emails saying that this was going down. So, I mean, it wasn't
it's
like
nice
it was.
It's nice to get invites, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And we will accept them from, 98% of the people.
We'll accept invites from anybody
if
is
you
what
have
he was
a,
going to
If
say.
You have a cheese tray and...
Oh, man.
Even if you don't.
Well, there goes our credibility.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, yeah.
That's right. Open Source says we like cheese. But anyway.
Around the lunch hour, Charlie Angus was at the Bookshelf Green Room, and he was talking to a round table of people. You can actually hear that on Guelph Politico. It was this week's Guelph Politicast. You can hear him read from his book, Children of the Broken Treaty, and then answering some questions from people and talking about his politics. So if you've listened to that, this conversation actually came out of a lot of that, but you don't need to listen to... the other Charlie Angus bit on the Politicast to get this. I think it's very self-contained. But I talked to him about his politics and about, how to bring honor and the idea of public service back, less cynicism in politics. And at the end, there is also a question about electoral reform because this is Guelph and you can't get out of Guelph without talking about electoral reform. So let's toss it to myself last week, back in time. One of the things I did note that you talked about the debasement of public life, which we hear a lot of people say when they're running for office, I'm not a politician. And it seems to me that this is, it's almost like the first thing that needs to be addressed because people don't want to be in politics, but they don't want to be politicians. And that seems like, I don't know, an oxymoron. It seems like we have a bunch of people who don't want to be a part of the business that they want to be a part of.
Well, politics should be an honorable profession.
Mm.
But politics tends not to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, people running for leader are always saying that they're not a politician. I tend to say, well, you have to test that theory to see if it's actually true or just another politician trying to be a politician by saying they're not a politician. What I see is a real disconnect between a growing professional political class and what people are really living. I think that there's a tendency to try and dumb down politics, to believe that Canadians aren't smart enough to deal with complicated issues, or an attempt to hoodwink them by trying to make your spin just a certain angle. I think we need to reestablish a relationship of trust with Canadians. There is a growing political disconnect in this country, and people need to deal with it. Outside of Ottawa is not sunny ways. More and more people do not look to politicians and believe they're speaking for them. And we can see what's happened in the United States, where that growing gulf became a chasm, and look what came up in the middle of the chasm was Donald Trump and the rise of an alt-right. So we can use this leadership race for the NDP to reestablish a relationship or reestablish a sense of trust. But I think that Parliament has to be a place that people believe is there to do the right thing. And right now, it is a bit of a sideshow. And our new Prime Minister hasn't added to that sense of trust at all. I mean, his behavior in the House to me is very much a continuation of the debasement of politics. It's more like a politics is image as opposed to politics is substance. And let's have good debates and let's disagree. That's good. It's healthy.
I made a note while you were talking that the lip service to change, it seems to be enough, because we hear about people...
Thank you, Lynn. Thanks.
We hear about people, you know, just saying, well, the other guy was worse. And, you know, it's enough that we have Justin Trudeau and other people recognizing that there's an issue, and then they tell us it's complicated, and then the issue doesn't seem to be a change because the alternative is someone who ignores the issue completely.
Well, I don't accept that things are better just because the other guy was worse. and I hear that. Well, Justin Trudeau is not Stephen Harper. Well, so what? What is it that we are offering? What is it that he's offering? You know, I don't, you know, in terms of New Democrats and Liberals, I believe that Liberals share many of the same values New Democrats do. Belief in a more inclusive society, a belief in fairness. It's the solutions that are offered that are fundamentally different, and that's where I want to stay focused. The Liberals very much follow in the same economic model that the Conservatives have done, and I think that there's been, over 40 years, there's been an undermining of the middle class and undermining of regions and communities to an unacceptable level. So what I will offer are alternatives. This is an alternative way of doing this. This is where I think we should be focused in terms of what does change look like. Well, change should be that as a political leader, I am not going to be able to run and promise everything to everybody. But where we will make change are the promises that we make we will follow through on.
What was interesting was that you're talking about things that are going on in your own backyard, but you see it traveling back and forth that the things that are local issues are also national issues, too. And I think there's maybe not as much appreciation of that you know, we get focused on the differences between the areas in this country, that we don't see that the issues in Fort Mac are the same in Northern Ontario, are the same in New Brunswick, perhaps even the same in Guelph.
This is, I think, what's really important for people to understand in Canada is that we often see ourselves as we're supposed to be different from each other. It's supposed to be rural versus urban, millennial versus boomer, left versus right. But we're actually seeing that there are many fundamental issues that are the same. And there is a growing economic cleavage that's happening in our nation. So for one of the great things about being on a leadership tour is what I learned on Vancouver Island and seeing how that connects to what's happening in Alberta, to how that connects to downtown urban area, and to say, listen, folks, there are commonalities. Let's find ways. Let's build a narrative. Let's build a narrative of change that says, what do we have in common? What we have in common is greater than what divides us.
And that's something else that you mentioned, that you consider yourself a storyteller, not necessarily a policy wonk. And the oddity that struck me there was when we see somebody like a Donald Trump, who is most obviously not a policy wonk, we think that the opposite of that is to go full head deep into policy, which I think was what Hillary Clinton's approach was. But it almost seems like the approaches that we would typically think the opposite of how we deal with the Trump is to actually not make it about policy, but to make it a different type of story.
Well, I mean, the policies that we bring forward are important because these are the tools of change.
Right.
But I think sometimes we just obsess on the policy and not on who we need to identify, number one, as social democrats. Who is it that we're speaking to if we're going to speak for them? And if we know who we're speaking to, then we're going to listen to them. This is the issue of rebuilding a relationship of trust, which Hillary Clinton's team completely failed to do. And we need to, you know, the progressives have to look at that and say that was a failure, that they didn't go out and talk to people and hear their growing frustrations, and then they could have articulated them. And Donald Trump is a political arsonist, but he managed to capture some of the insecurity that the Democrats easily should have been able to address and speak to, but they weren't talking to those people. So
to typically address.
Yeah. And I believe that that's where the story arc, the narrative is really important, because people I found in political life, they're not into agreeing with every single thing you say. In fact, beware of a politician who agrees with everything you say. They want to know that you've got their back, that you understand them, that you know where they're coming from, and that the politician has values that are rooted someplace. So people know where my values are rooted. They know where I'm going to come down on things. We may not agree on everything, and that's perfect. That's great. But it's about those issues of values and vision, and that's where the story helps bring in voters to say, okay, now I know where you're going and why.
Which almost goes against the notion of party politics in a way, because people see the color orange, they see the color blue, they see the color red, and think these are the set of values that apply to every single last person who runs under that color.
Well, I think that, I mean, the overall New Democratic Party values, you know, founded in, you know, social democracy, and it is a story, you know, it's a story of Tommy Douglas, but it's a story of blue-collar orange. It's a story of the urban environmental orange. I mean, we have different facets of our party, and that's good. You need a push and pull in any party. But I think our party has always been most successful when we've been very rooted in community, very rooted in the real lives of ordinary people. And we've been way less effective when we've been feel that we don't have to listen to the ordinary folk who sit at Tim Hortons and, you know, talk ideas.
So somebody brought up the Leap Manifesto and the divide. Would you say that is a narrative that's sort of been imposed on the NDP? It's like a media narrative that there are the two camps and there's kind of an NDP.
Well, yeah, I mean, the national media don't really understand us all that well. They find us really odd, so they sort of try and write a narrative. So this idea that, you know, the NDP is tearing itself up over the Leap Manifesto, I don't see that at all. I see that this push and pull between the environment and blue collar is very healthy, and it's what our nation needs. And it's not just blue collar, but the issue of finding a balance between environment and economy is the fundamental issue of our generation. And so as New Democrats, we shouldn't be afraid of these conversations. We should welcome them. That's why I say, to me, LEAP is the beginning of the conversation. It's not the end of the conversation. But now we need to say to rural Canada, we need to say to, you know, labor and blue collar, okay, we have international obligations to meet to reduce greenhouse gases. How do we do that? And how do we do that without throwing a generation of workers under the bus? How do we make a transition that's just? And I think we're well suited for it, but we have to be not afraid of it, and we actually have to enjoy the conversation.
Your public awaits, so I will just wrap up with this, because I'm actually surprised me no one brought it up, but electoral reform, your colleague, competitor, frenemy, I'm not sure how you guys are phrasing that these days, but Nathan Cullen was here a couple of weeks ago. He's doing a national tour. Electoral reform seems deeply important to this community, so in terms of your own perspective on it.
Well, I think the work Nathan has done on electoral reform has been staggeringly impressive. His passion for it, I listened to him a great deal on it. But what I've learned from seeing the Liberals in action is they had no intention of following through on their promise. And I don't want to be in that situation again where we naively believe we can sit and negotiate electoral reform with two parties that are fundamentally opposed to it. So I would suggest to people, if you want electoral reform, we're going to need to win with enough seats so that the New Democrats can bring it in, because otherwise it will be stonewalled. But if we do form government with enough seats, and I am the leader, we will make electoral reform happen in that first mandate. And I will certainly be working very closely with Nathan Cullen on it, because he's done extraordinary work on this.
You don't think the Liberals were in earnest when they made that promise? Because Nathan's people, you know, crunched the numbers, and it was like 1,600 times he said the first last election.
I know. I believe Justin Trudeau when he said it. I didn't believe that the Liberal Party believed in electoral reform, because they built the system, and the system's worked for them. But I did believe that the Prime Minister meant, just as I believed so many of the other promises he made. And I think that that was a colossal act of cynicism to believe that it wouldn't matter to Canadians. It was some policy wonkish thing. He made that promise. Canadians heard them. They believed him. I believed him. And I believe that that cynicism will come back to haunt them.
Do you think that cynicism might haunt you with or any person running for the NDP leadership? It's a very aspirational... The NDP has always been a sort of aspirational party. And, you know, cynicism sort of doesn't discriminate.
Well, we have to make our promises. We have to be careful. This is why I don't overpromise. And so I say, well, these are things we will look at. These are things we will do. We have to follow through on the issue of electoral reform. Justin Trudeau was emphatic. There was nothing aspirational. He made that promise, and he walked on that promise because it was no longer convenient. And that, I think, will hurt them in 2019.
And once again, that was Charlie Angus, who is running for the NDP leadership, and he was here in Guelph last week. Been a busy couple of weeks here in Guelph. We had Justin Trudeau in town on Tuesday, and Lisa Raitt did a drive-by last Thursday. Yeah, it wasn't advertised.
Oh,
it was just kind of...
under the radar.
I saw the pictures on Guelph Today.
Tim Hortons?
And,
what? Or was it more?
No, I don't think it was Tim Hortons. It was... I think it was downtown somewhere. I'd have to look it up. But
another Robusta?
No. Maybe. Well,
it's
we know
not really
that's
downtown.
We know that's Maxime Bernier's favorite.
It's not really downtown, depending who you talk to.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway.
Well, we don't want to start
day.
A turf war.
Mm, I think so.
We're going to move on, though, to an announcement earlier this week, Monday, I believe, that Kathleen Wynne is going to be doing this experiment, or the Liberal government is doing this experiment for 3 years for guaranteed basic income. It's a pilot project, about $50 million a year, looking to help about 4,400 households in Ontario guaranteed basic income, which just basically means that basically basic. It means that
basic income.
People who make a low set amount of money or will be topped up by the provincial government, so that they know they know that they're going to have an amount of money coming in. It's not going to be predicated on filling out a lot of paperwork or, you know, having to struggle with, you get an extra money from the feds through your child benefit. The province takes that away. So there's none of that stuff. It seems to be what a lot of economists are pushing for, surprisingly, even like really conservative economists. Like Milton Friedman has said he's for it, although he calls it... negative income tax, which seems like, I don't know, kind of a way to...
Well, yeah, because if I understand it right, they're not physically giving you money. It's done via the tax form. And I thought Milton Friedman was one of the ones that was like completely anti-tax altogether. But actually, this is one of those concepts that sounds lefty, but it isn't really.
No.
It is to some degree conceptually when you're saying we're going to give everyone... some money, as they did. And everything you probably heard this week that referred to the study that was done 40 years ago in Dauphin, Manitoba, where they did a three-year pilot of a similar thing to see what happened. But it was a little different in that, like, everyone just got money. Whereas this is a select few, this is just my view, but it's one of those things that seems good and is a feel-good announcement. But when you break it down... And it's great for the 4,000 households and those that are connected to the households and whatnot. It doesn't really solve the problem.
No.
To solve that problem, if you did this project for the entire province, the prediction by RaiseTheRates.ca would be $4 billion to do this, which is obviously not going to happen. And part of the problem with it as well as I'd said, it sounds like a good thing, but the Friedmans of the world and that love this kind of thing because they hate welfare. They absolutely have a pathological hatred for anything welfare. You getting benefits from the state is one thing. You getting a break is another. And the greater concept is, well, if you're able to pay for all the services that you need, a good example would be, let's say, mental health. If you're, people in poverty, there's a definite trend for greater mental health issues, among other things. I'm just picking that as an example. It would be, rather than have a state apparatus that would guide you through that system as exists now, it would be, here's the money, you're on your own. Now, I know that wouldn't happen in Ontario specifically because we are sort of committed to social services. But the bigger picture of a program like this does head towards that whole, here's some money, just take care of it yourself. It's a free market. Everything, it's up to you. It's your choice as to who you choose. But it's not that clear cut. But that's why the right like it.
Right. So. Well, I mean, it's nice to sort of have universal acceptance of the idea of helping poor people. I do think that, we're talking about $17,000 a year. That's where you max out if you're single, or $24,000 a year. That's where you max out if you're a couple. And of course, if you make $12,000 a year at, McDonald's or Tim Hortons, doing a part-time job, they're going to take away half of what your total salary is worth. So if you make $12,000 a year, they'll take away $6,000. So it's not perfect, and you're just probably not going to get out of poverty because you guaranteed to have $17,000 a year income. But I will say that for what you mentioned about how, there are a lot of people on the right, a lot of economists who just, hate welfare and hate the implication of it. And the only person I was able to find who said really anything negative about it was Kevin Milligan, who is an economics prophet in British Columbia, who wrote in the National Post that this was all going to go to young people who are living in their parents' basement. So they can buy more pot and cookies. And I think that was almost a direct quote. But that's really simplistic to me, because he also said, it discourages people to work, which is always the argument about welfare. It's people want to work. People want that dignity.
Yep.
It's more often than not. And as for people living in their parents' basements, there are stories out there about, the housing market. People who can buy houses often do it with the help of their parents in order to get the down payment going. Oh, that
absolutely.
Is a shocking trend. So, there's widespread reliance on the economics of the parents. Even if you're in a position to, buy a house, a lot of people out there buying houses are still leaning on mom and dad to make it happen.
Oh, for sure. And that's part of the problem. Big problems of the real estate market right now is that even if you're on this program and getting the extra income, you still couldn't afford to buy a place. You couldn't even afford to buy one of the new condos in town. I don't think so.
Or rent one.
Or rent, potentially maybe rent one, but then of course.
A lot of provisos.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things like condo fees and that aren't factored into the bigger picture. But yeah, again, another story for another day. We should have condo day on the show. It keeps coming up. But this, I saw a little bit with Chris Ballard, who is he'll be the minister in charge of this. I missed his title. He has a very long title. Chris Ballard minister responsible for poverty reduction. Which I didn't even know was a thing. And I don't know if it was created just to incorporate this project. And he did this thing where he sort of talked about the project for a bit. And it is a project. This isn't a thing. I think people are getting the impression they hear guaranteed basic income that everybody's going to get it. Because I think it happened recently in Finland, somewhere they actually implemented it. Mm-hmm. But this is a pilot project. And by the time, by the year 2020, it's still only going to be 4,000 people or so involved with this, right? And he did the whole, we're going to also make improvements to healthcare and education. But there's no specifics in that. He didn't say, we are going to give $100 million to education. We're going to give $1 billion to healthcare. It was we're going to make improvements there.
Well, they did have the budget this week. So.
Yes. So, and that's, we'll probably have a little bit of time to talk about that.
Well, but, we know what's in the budget now because it was dropped at 4 o'clock.
Do you want to give us a little rundown?
I got it here.
I was waking
290 pages, and in it,
and you read them all like
no, I wish I
saw him. He was reading them.
I wish I could read that fast. cigarettes. If you're a smoker, you will are going to pay more starting Friday night at midnight. So another $2, $10 per carton. That's going up.
Just keep going with those syntaxes.
I know.
Is anybody smoking
it's
anymore?
It's
got to be the most passe thing.
Even
in
smokers
the
out there have got to be saying themselves, just outlawed already.
Yeah. Ban it so I can quit.
OSAP graduates can start repaying after they earn $35,000 a year. The old red line was $25,000. There are going to be two new hospitals funded in Windsor and Niagara, plus renovations to Hamilton and Mississauga hospitals. The abortion pill, I'm going to butcher this.
46?
Mifgymiso will now be publicly funded. There's going to be a hotel tax. I don't know what exactly that's going to entail. I'm just reading off like the bullet points on CBC. There's going to be a seniors public transit tax credit starting July 1, which is when the old tax credit expires from the feds. The province will allocate unused lands worth between 75 and 100 million to develop 2,000 new affordable housing units in Toronto. There's a new pledge to spend $190 million over 3 years on a career Kickstarter plan for high school students and post-secondary students to get access to co-ops. And then this is the big one. PharmaCare for 4 million children up to the age of 24, which will be covered by the province.
Ooh, so stealing a little bit of the NDP's fire, because they just released that. It's like PharmaCare for everyone. So PharmaCare, but for the kids.
For everyone 24 and under.
Get your hankies out. That's like the children will not
and
have
of course,
all their meds.
Though,
I mean, you're not going to say no to that, of course.
No, and, you know,
give me the drugs.
And I would
children
would love to see Andrea Horvath's face when she read that. But, yeah, it's that's going to start January 1, 2018, and yeah, that kind of really undermines, because that was the big NDP announcement over the weekend. It's like, province by PharmaCare, come on
and
to the NDP.
Liberals
are like, we
steal
see your PharmaCare and raise you for the kids.
That would have been a late night one, probably like, what can we do?
Yeah.
What can we do to trip them up again? Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, it's a balanced budget. So.
Of course, 100% balanced. Always. Yeah, that's interesting. And it sounds like, by the sounds of it, no one is going to be paying their student loan, because who's making $35,000 a year after graduating?
Oh, for sure.
Three or four.
I mean, unless you're, you know, in a STEM field or get really
straight
lucky.
White
or
male with a tie on.
Yeah.
Ooh,
so,
that was a bit harsh, but in my view.
But that's the look at the budget, and we'll probably talk about it more next week when we have some time to, you know, actually digest it, because it did, like I said, it did drop an hour ago.
Did they mention anything about the basic income? Did that come up in the budget, or is that considered a separate program? I guess it's separate. Separate but together.
I honestly don't know. There may be
something buried in the pages that is indicative of what Chris Ballard was talking about the other day about, we're going to do this and do that and throw money in.
Well, I imagine
PharmaCare for the children would definitely help anyone.
I imagine PharmaCare is part of that, yes. I imagine that, you know, affordable housing is part of that. The seniors' transit tax credit would probably be a part of that. New spending on hospitals and renovations for hospitals would probably be a part of that. So, yeah, it's...
Yeah, well, it's a feel-good thing, I suppose, but I guess we'll take some time and pick it apart and then give it a quarter, the 15 minutes next week or something like that, if we have time. But
well, who knows what'll happen.
This is what happens when stories happen fast and furious. I think I mentioned it before about in the Rob Ford days, things were happening like minutes before airtime, and we're trying to like, what? It was always Thursday, too, wasn't it?
Folks, we got to take a break because we have to get ready and bring in our guests, and we're going to talk about Earth Day when we come back. You are listening to Open Source and Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
That was The Clash, because everybody knows Scotty Hurt's rule: when all else fails, play The Clash. It actually has a couple tie-ins. The song was Lost in the Supermarket. Kosher, Charlie Angus's favorite band. Mm-hmm. He never hesitates to mention them. Mm-hmm. And I think that song's probably autobiographical for me because every time I'm in the Costco, that's me. So
Lost in the Supermarket.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Costco. Anyway. And, of course, we're talking about Earth Day consumption, consumerism, plastics, blah, blah.
Well, that's a great setup.
Yeah, isn't it, though? That's except for the blah, blah, but that was just, yes.
So we want to welcome back Shane Ward, and he is speaking today for Plastic Free Guelph. And here with us as well is Susan Carey, who is of the Transition Guelph and the Tool Library, and you're starting something with seeds now, and you are a very busy woman, in other words.
I am.
And so we wanted to talk about Earth Day stuff, obviously. We try and do a yearly Earth Day show, and we had to postpone it 5 days this year because we had a special guest last week and who just happened to be free because Queen's Park wasn't in session. But so let's just start with maybe what you guys did for Earth Day. How did you guys mark Earth Day this year? Oh, Susan's making a face.
I have no idea.
It's all a blur.
I can't remember. Every day is Earth Day, Adam.
Oh, good
yes,
answer.
I'd have
good
to
answer.
Agree with that. I mean, I went to the park today and picked up a whole bunch of garbage. I mean, for Earth Day for us, we had our annual Earth Day cleanup down at Royal City Park this year. Last year, we did do some cleanup on the campus for Earth Day. We also actually initiated a campaign on Friday that ran through till Sunday called Straws Suck. So we had 11 businesses within the city that had volunteered not to serve straws for the weekend unless somebody had asked for one. We had such a positive output from that program that we're actually creating a document right now and getting businesses to sign on as a year-long commitment to not serve straws in their restaurants.
Mm-hmm. That does seem... It's one of those interesting things that it's such a small thing, but you don't realize... And I saw it on the Plastic Free Facebook page that people pull straws out of turtles' noses, that they end up turtles' noses.
Really?
Yeah, it's really sad. And I mean, you know what? As somebody like me who works in the hospitality industry, I mean, most people will get a straw, stir their drink with it, and throw it back on the bar. So
right.
It's mostly just diverting all of that waste that's used for 3 seconds that will impact our environment for the next 52,000 years.
Let's consider things generally for a moment, because you two are very active in environmentalism and sustainability, and I don't think those are in vogue right now, because, you know, there's certain people whose names we won't mention and potentially in the White House right now, but it just seems like environmentalism isn't a high priority, and it seems like that is exactly the wrong place our national leaders should be in, because, you know, as we've seen this year alone, floods, 100-year floods every year now. In California, it doesn't rain for 5 years, and then it rains for 3 straight months. And it just seems like we need national, international commitment. And even if we have, you know, Canada, I think a lot of people are of the opinion that Trudeau is, regardless of what people may personally feel, is at least committed to the environment. At least it gives lip service to the environment. But it's hard when there's someone sucking so much oxygen in terms of different directions. So how are you guys feeling about environmental leadership now?
You can take the leadership.
It's interesting. It's honestly such a big mess. I feel like the environment has become a marketing tool for a lot of leaders in this world to make it seem like they're doing something, but it's very hard to justify that they actually are doing stuff. I mean, for instance, in Ontario, we look at the Wynn government that has committed to reducing emissions, which is great because we have seen a lot less smog days in Ontario, but we are also buying carbon credits from California and from Quebec in order so that we can produce more carbon credits in Ontario. And, you know, in the end, it's all about producing jobs. So it really is a big cycle, but it's hard to justify governments moving on environmental movements. You look at the Trump administration, who has unilaterally approved the Dakota Access Pipeline. He's withdrawn a lot of funding from the EPA, including to the Great Lakes funds, which will directly impact Canada. I mean, you look at Lake Erie every year. We're dealing with algae blooms every year now, it seems, and the lakes aren't freezing over like they should, so it's creating a warmer environment for that algae bloom to grow bigger every year. So I think, you know, we have an upcoming federal election. We have an upcoming provincial election. I think the environment needs to be a big issue. We drew a red line on the 2-degree Celsius movement, and for some reason we seem to be neglecting every single thing that kind of came with that. So, you know, I'm very fortunate, and I'm sure Susan can say the same thing. We're very fortunate to be in positions where we get to champion the environment every day and be the leaders in our community for providing sustainable methods for living.
And sustainability is a big part of what you do, Susan, the tool library, which it's such a, again, going back to the straws thing, it's something you don't really think about. But a lot of people buy hedge clippers or buy, you know, a nail gun or something and maybe use it once or twice, and then it sits in the garage gathering dust. And you don't really typically think of that as waste being developed, but in a sense, it is waste. So something like a tool library is an incredible idea.
Yeah, and we were really inspired by Toronto Tool Library. They've mentored us. And one of the things that they got set up in their advertising, a little line they've got, is you don't need a drill. You need a hole in the wall. So changing the way you think about tools, right? They say that the average tool is actually used for less than 20 minutes of its life.
Mm.
So why not stick it on a shelf and have it at a central hub where a lot of people can use it? And this way, too, eventually, we haven't reached this point yet, we'll be able to have just a few really high-quality tools. Mm. At this point, what we've got is all community-donated things.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you do also do the Repair Cafe, which is also, you know, fits into the triple R's, reduce, reuse, which, you know, a lot of, again, that's a very societal thing, is throw something away. And, you know, why not fix it?
Yeah. The Repair Cafe is, again, an international movement that's growing, and we joined them so that we can use the same logos and so on and be recognizable. We're running Repair Cafes every 2 months now, and it's going really well. It's surprisingly popular. This is our outreach, really. Mm-hmm. So the tool library is such a static thing. It's just a closet full of stuff, right? And this way we get to go out and communicate with people and really help them right there kind of on the street.
You really need to, I think you need to trump that up a bit. Like, we have this big, beautiful tool library.
A bigly.
Bigly, yeah. But anyway, that's a little sales tip for the day.
Okay, thank you.
She'll just tell them some of them were Papa Hertz's tools ended up at the tool library. So,
oh, you wanted to put in a plug for yourself.
I got to put in a plug for my the family tools.
Okay.
As opposed to the family jewels.
We actually get a lot that way.
Yeah.
Somebody in the family is downsized or downsized permanently. And
I assure you, they were high-quality tools.
Yes.
You've never seen tools like this, yeah.
I was curious as to how both of you felt about the March on Science on the weekend. Do you see that as a sort of a positive tie-in with Earth Day? Did it steal some of the fire, or what was your opinion on that?
No, like, I think it's crazy that almost every single scientist in the world says that climate change is an issue, and for some reason the people in position of powers to make those changes can't seem to listen. I think it was a very big movement. You look at the United States, more people showed up to the movement than Trump's inauguration. So I think it's a huge, it really ties in with Earth Day very well, because it has to do with the climate change that we're dealing with today in society, and the fact that so many scientists have pointed out exactly what has happened 5 years ago. And it's taking us till now to realize, wow, maybe it actually is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the way it really brings out the individual with the creativity on the signs and so on. And I think people get a lot out of that, having a chance to really have their say, their individualized say.
It's so infuriating because I know I didn't watch it, but I did saw it on Media Matters that CNN has, you know, they have this panel, and they, of course, they bring in one climate change denier. They had Bill Nye and then a climate change denier and then somebody in government policy. And it's just like, we're still doing this in 2017. We're having, you know, we have to have balance because we have to represent the 2% that mm-hmm. don't think there's a problem. But that's to me the most infuriating part to me, is that still after all this time, there's still a balance that, you know, 98% of something. And I always use this example, you know, the old toothpaste commercial about 4 to 5 dentists recommend. Well, the fifth dentist wasn't recommending you brush your teeth with milkshakes.
Right.
He was recommending a different toothpaste.
And he smoked, too, probably. Yeah.
He probably did.
We've got a Dremel you could use.
Oh, there you go. Home dentistry not recommended or endorsed by open sources or this station. There you go.
Good catch. But you know, we're talking about how sort of the system has failed. So we're kind of looking to local solutions again, and we're looking to individual people to you know, like yourselves, to fight against, you know, the overuse of plastic, fight for sustainability, reusing things, sharing more. I'm wondering though, because a lot of scientists are saying like we're past the point of no return. And it's just like, thinking the old line about acting locally and thinking globally is great. But in the back of, I think, all our heads is a concern that just acting locally isn't enough anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I look at, you know, Canada has its issues as well in terms of climate change. But the actions that Notley's government took in Alberta during the Fort McMurray fires was an incredible leadership in terms of government taking response on what has happened because of a result of us damaging the environment. You look at the United States, both Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Sandy, you know, the federal government left basically both of them to deal with their own issues. FEMA was nowhere to be found in those times. The Red Cross was nowhere to be found, and the Red Cross even has its own corruption to deal with. I think it's something like 60% of the donations that go to them don't even end up going back into communities. But, you know, I think local activism is honestly where a lot of this starts. We've seen a lot of really great movements over the last number of years in Canada, and it all starts with a small community. Look at here in Guelph. I mean, we're talking about democracy Guelph and the fact that Trudeau took back his decision to change the election system, and it started out with a group of people who said this isn't right, and it's turned into what is a, you know, local movement that they're pushing as a national movement. So I think in terms of any type of movement, local is where you start, and then you kind of branch your way out and, you know, change other people's minds while you're at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the only way you can really address these things is on a local scale, because we just don't have the capacity to really live our life on a global scale. And I think that earlier question you asked about, is environmentalism still sexy, really? I think it's just been rebranded. And now we look at things like responsible consumerism or the sharing economy or just lifestyle changes, as opposed to thinking that there's this vague religion out there that we need to adhere to.
Mm-hmm. But it's still, you know, and we see this a lot in, I guess, particularly from the right, although it does seem like the right is catching up, that you can't have environmental justice and economic justice, or not even justice per se, but, you know, back in the, you know, the 80s and 90s, we're talking about, well, we can't, you know, afford environmentalism and the economy is too fragile. And it's, you know, you smirk, but it's an argument that still wins. And even though people see the damage, they see the danger, but for some reason they treat the economy as the more fragile.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I agree with that. I guess I kind of laugh at that because I feel like that is the worst argument towards trying to live a sustainable life. Like, I look at all the restaurants that participated in Earth Day weekend this weekend with Straws Suck, and the amount of businesses that said we could save so much money by just not serving straws. And if we just invested in biodegradable straws and only gave them out as somebody asked, you're still saving money in the long run by not having to buy straws. I look at the plastic bag industry and the fact that, like, what if the government invested money into an economic action plan that saw the retrofitting of plastic facilities in across the country and retrofitted those plants to become plant-based plants where we're creating plastic bags out of corn and soybeans and whatnot, and why we're stuck on this one-minded thing of, like, oil. Like, it all comes down, it's not even the economy, it's oil. And I mean, I guess in a way, the oil impacts the economy, but we have some of the dirtiest oil in the world. And I don't understand why so many people can't realize that. I mean, there's so many documentaries out there on it, and it still seems to be this thing of convenience, really. I don't even think it's the market. I think it honestly comes down to convenience. What's easier, buying a plastic fork and throwing it out, or buying a silver fork and having to wash it after?
That's true. That is a point. We are in a very convenient society, and it doesn't just apply to that aspect of it, though. I mean, I've tried to make this
argument before, that you tune into the news and you see people, the news anchors complaining about the cold weather or looking forward to spring. And I'm sure you people tune into the news tonight, you'll see those same anchors on what a great day it was today, even though it felt like it was 30 degrees. I came to this show last week wearing my winter coat. Mm-hmm. So in 7 days, I went from wearing my winter coat to you, Shane, coming into the studio in shorts. You would not have come into the shorts with shorts we were doing the show last week, but people have had to, this was this great thing that happened today. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but there, it's a symptom. It's you like you were wearing a winter coat one week and you're wearing shorts the next, and that isn't right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the Canadian spring also playing into effect. But no, like rolling off of that, I mean, we've had the warmest two winters in like a century, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a serious issue. I mean, last year was the hottest year on record. So I don't know. Like, is it going to take people 5 years to realize that this is an issue? I don't know. just for me, with all of the statistics and research that we do around plastics, it's very hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that people just don't get it. Mm. And so it takes me doing campaigns like Straws Suck and calling people suckers to kind of make a statement for people to realize things like this and, you know, just nagging people about it. And it has made a huge impact over the last, month or so with everything going on. But yeah.
Susan, why do you hate people?
Why do you like the planet more than the free market? Yeah. No, it's not one of those shows. I mean, tell us, Susan.
It's starting to feel like one of those shows.
Are you now? Or
I was going to say, before I was interrupted and attacked, I was going to say that people don't need to necessarily always buy in because mm-hmm. the economy is changing. And for instance, people are going towards minimalism. They're starting to realize that, yeah, it's fun to buy all this stuff, but you know what? It becomes a burden. It's a weight. And, mm-hmm. you know, it causes actually people to have mental illnesses and emotional problems, just the weight of ownership. And so, you'll notice now, if you go on Kijiji, say, and you look up, bone china teacups, or, you know, my grandmother's got this really cool tea set, and, oh, this beautiful carved bedhead thing, you can't sell it. Mm. Despite the fact that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, you could get some nice coin and go to Cuba on that.
Right.
It just doesn't have the value. And I think that's got... that's probably maybe the leading edge, one could hope, of an economy, of a mentality where we're just not buying and owning the same quantities of stuff.
No, and I think you're right. I think there's sort of like multi-levels of mentality going on here that and nobody's kind of drawn the lines between it. There is that minimalism you're talking about. And in Charlie Angus, in an interview we played at the beginning of the show, he's like, well, I'm talking to people in industry, even the oil industry, who are saying like, when is government going to lower the boom on us? We're like waiting for it to happen, and they're kind of just leaving us alone. And so you have industry saying, you know what, we are preparing ourselves for the day, and government isn't sort of catched up to where we are. We know this is what's coming. We have places like China, which, you know, huge coal burners who are now, you know, making leaps and bounds in green technologies. And, you know, we have people like you, you two are leading the way on different ideas and different ways to be sustainable and live healthily and help the environment that perhaps hadn't been considered before. And it makes me wonder, you know, when do we sort of tie all these things together? Because it does seem like whatever sector you're in or whatever place you are in life, you know, middle class, upper middle class, whatever, we're all sort of playing on different fields. And although we're kind of all seem to be going in the same direction.
And that's all that matters.
Right.
You know, we're all going in the same direction. Mm. It weaves together one way or another. You know, next repair cafe. Well, we never have had straws at a repair cafe, but, you know, now we'll do it with intention. There will be an intentional lack of straws.
But, you know, you were talking about the straws and... Again, you go into a place and say, you know what, we should really get rid of straws because it's damaging the environment, it's plastic, et cetera, and then they're looking at their bottom line and saying, yeah, we should get rid of straws because it's, you know, we're spending this absurd amount of money on thousands of straws that we're just tossing in the garbage anyway. So
yeah, and I mean, I think it also comes down to a lot of the places that really agree as well that, you know, straws are terrible for the environment. You know, I was talking to one manager downtown, and they already offer biodegradable straws at their restaurant, and they were just going to pull them out for the weekend and just give them to people as they asked for it. And it was already great that they had the biodegradable straws, but she had even mentioned too that, like, you know, the impacts that straws have on the environment, like, they're more than willing to be involved in it. Like, you know, I think it's half and half. It really comes down to, we can save the environment by not spending money on straws. But I've had, like, the Straw Suck campaign had a really positive feedback in terms of both restaurants and the community itself. Like, so many people who were just like, why is this only happening for 3 days? why isn't this happening, like, all the time? And, you know, it's different when you talk about different issues. Straws is one thing. The plastic bags is another thing where people think, well, what if I'm going home for work and I didn't bring my bags? You know, I'm going to have to buy new bags. And so we're still brainstorming ideas, trying to think about that. But, you know, plastic bags pay in the same thing. We use it for about 20 minutes and then usually ends up getting used for your garbage. And then it goes into the garbage.
Are plastic water bottles on that list as well?
Yes.
Every time we have a good rain, all I see on the way home from here is bottles, plastic bottles at the drain. Yeah. Every single drain.
The most I picked up today at the Guelph Conservation was plastic bottles and beer bottles.
Not to mention any names of companies or anything, but, you know, they are everywhere.
Well, it's a pretty big one in town, I think. Unfortunately, we are running out of time, but I always like to ask this when we are talking about environmental issues and we have people like yourselves, and are you hopeful about the future? Are you optimistic?
Absolutely. I mean, you, first of all, you have to be to do this work. You have to be. And I feel like we are making a difference. And it's incremental, but that's okay. I trust incremental. If it was sudden, then I'd be a little worried.
No, I'd have to agree, too. I mean, you know, a lot of us put a lot of really good effort into some of these things, just like the city of Guelph. But no, I agree. I am very optimistic that, you know, we're moving in a positive direction right now.
Do you guys want to plug your groups real quick, too?
I do. Look up Guelph Tool Library. Just Google knows where it is. And we are having a repair cafe at the downtown library on May 27th.
Gotta love Google.
And the library.
Yeah. And we're Plastic Free Guelph, so you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Plastic Free Guelph. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Yes, we will. So, Susan Carey and Shane Ward, thank you so much for joining us today and talking Earth Matters. We appreciate it. And we, of course, you'll find all that information online for the Tool Library and for Plastic Free.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm afraid that is it for Open Sources Guelph this week, although we will have another special guest next week. Ward 1 Councillor Dan Gibson will be here, and we will be talking to him about all the latest goings on at City Council. And anything else Open Sources related, you can find it at our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on the Twitters. And you can hear this episode and previous episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. And you can subscribe through iTunes to get that too. And Stitcher now. We are on Stitcher, so if you have the Android phone and get the Stitcher app, you can get Open Sources now as well.
I have a brand new Android phone. I'll do that as soon as I get home.
Excellent. You should have done it already. It's been up and on Stitcher for days. Anyway, you can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at a spot called The Spanner Book. It's not on any funky app. It's just old school Blogorama. Is that a thing? It is now.
You can also find that on the Googles.
Yes.
Stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. with more Open Sources. We'll be right back.
Bye.